this band called the Traveling Wilburys, right?
Yeah. The Wilburys was an interesting
moment. With Petty, Harrison, Roy Orbison. Yeah. I mean, and, you know, I was watching a television show the other day, and it was called Is He or Isn't He a Wilbury? and so it was a great line because it's what Dylan coined this phrase, where he'd throw out a name to Tom Petty or George, and he'd say, you know, name a guy, Johnny Cash, definitely a Wilbury. Definitely, you know what I mean? Chuck Berry, never a Wilbury. You know, so in other words, you would have a certain quality and characteristic, and if you would, I don't know, je ne sais quoi, I'm going to look for the, whatever that is, it's that mystical thing that either makes you or doesn't make you a Wilbury, in air quotes, you know, to,
would have been nice if they rotated, being a Wilbury around, like, you know, bringing a Kris Kristofferson or bringing
you mean kind of like
a,
the Ramones,
a Waylon Jennings, yeah. or
you know. Well, so I thought the guy from ELO, Jeff Lynne was a very interesting choice.
There's another amazing
but Jeff Lynne was actually the impetus for it,
and that's what I was about to say. And what people don't know, thank you. Please continue if you want.
So he had a great relationship with George Harrison, and they talked about it. And George had been playing with a lot of different people as well. So, I mean, one of the things that we often miss about the Beatles, because we concentrate so much on the Beatles, is how collaborative they were with other really big.
Billy
band.
Preston.
Billy Preston. That was a session musician.
But Eric Clapton.
Eric Clapton played, you know, and Duane Allman and all these guitarists played around them.
The Lady Bonnie and Friends.
And they all sort of played with each other. John Lennon and Bob Dylan were very good friends. If you ever want to watch a really drunken YouTube, there's a taxi of them, you know, a film of them in a taxi together driving around New York City chatting, which is, it's almost too unreal because it's Bob Dylan and John Lennon, you know, at the very young age, chatting about whatever they're chatting about. It almost doesn't make any difference just to see them both in the same frame.
Had nothing at the time, but now it's there's significance behind it.
But when Jeff Lynne went to it and said, we ought to form a group. And it's like, yeah, and we ought to invite...
Yeah, but so that's, by the way, that's where the line came from, which was, they said, what should we be? So Dylan said, we should be the Traveling Wilburys.
Right.
And so they said, okay, so who's a Wilbury?
Right.
And so the challenge was, every single time that they'd add or subtract a member, Roy Orbison, freaking a Wilbury, no question about it. You know what I mean? You know, so you think about that for a second, about who makes the cut. Because you've got the ability to have this all-star band.
And it really resurrected Orbison's career.
Oh, my God. Amazingly so.
Because he came out with an album right after the Wilburys album. It was just gold. I mean, it was, like, amazing. I've lost the name of it just for a second. But it came out right after the Wilburys. Wilburys was a big hit. And then he came out, and it just totally changed his career. Now, he didn't live a lot longer, which is unfortunate.
I think it was 2 years afterwards.
Yeah. But... what a life changer to play with your peers that are great, and it's just, you know, everyone, you know.
Well, and as you get into that, we'll call it an age bracket, and you are in that experience level. You know, you've lost a little bit of an edge, but you've gained the experience too.
Yeah. He's a guy that had a voice right up to the end.
Forever. And, you know, it's interesting, you know, you talk about Jeff Lynne, right? So... did that change his career or broaden his career?
I think with Jeff Lynne, it probably maintained his career because he's such a talent to begin with. I mean, he was all over the place. I mean, you look at a lot of...
So what is Jeff Lynne doing right now? Do we know?
I don't know.
That's a wonderful question. He was a great producer.
Yeah, so he may be producing. I don't know what he's doing right now, so I'd have to look it up. But
so again, 1-900-JEFF. Yeah. Call us, Jeff. Let us know what you're doing. Because you call out Jeff and let us know what you're doing right now, because inquiring minds want to know. Thank you very much. 1-800-JEFF. Thank you.
I imagine he's producing because he's such a good producer. And,
And then so they finished the Wilburys for whatever reason, and Johnny Cash was in it, and as we mentioned, a bunch of other people's lined up. And then Bob went into another, what I felt was like a recluse moment there, where he, you know, where he withdrew from the Wilburys and then found himself again writing.
He wrote a lot of political stuff at the after that as well.
So do you remember the movie? I think it's called Don't Look Back. Not Don't Look Back. It's the biopic about Dylan, where they have five different characters, including, I think, Katie Lang and a bunch of other people play Dylan, which is still one of my favorite movies and best use of Dylan music, I think, even though sung by other people. And that was my reemergence of, holy crap, Dylan lives, you know, in my mind. Well, and Dylan still lives in my mind, but that was like, Dylan still lives. He's still relevant. He's still important. You know, it's, I think it was in, you know, 2005, 2006. And, you know, it was like, this guy's, you know, what was it, 45 years into it at that point, and he's still there, you know? And I got people pointing fingers at me and telling me things.
Well, no, you threw out the questions, what's Jeff Lynne doing now? So I threw it in our favorite search engine, and I'm looking back, and it's like, we're talking about a lot of guys that have been through the mill a little bit. Kiss has got 52 concerts this year. Robin Trower, Elton John.
Elton John's, you know, goodbye tour is no longer. That was, forget about it.
It's his hello. It's his hello tour.
Hello. You say goodbye, I say hello.
Atlantic Rhythm Section.
Atlantic Rhythm Section is interesting. By the way, this is basically 3 weeks post the feeling that like the world is opening up post COVID. So we're like going, holy cow, all these concerts. I mean, I've been watching concerts blow up my notices, blow up my notification engine because I've got concerts in my notification engine. And everybody I want to see is now seems to be coming back.
Well, it's interesting because musicians have to play. And you know, thank God so many of them streamed concerts, streamed songs during COVID. But now that they have venues to play in again and they can have full audiences to play in, it is so amazing to see the excitement of people, you know, that, oh, I get to go see
so-and-so again.
So whoever you want to go see. And, you know, the venues are booked. They're booking as fast as they can. They're filling up, you know, all the arenas. And I think it's going to be a great next couple of years just because of the pent-up demand. Mm. It's going to be just sold out after sold out.
So is Dylan touring out again?
I don't know if he tours anymore.
Well, he toured last year.
Did he?
Not last year, but the year before, COVID. He toured with Paul Simon.
Oh, right. That was sort of a farewell tour again for both of them.
Right,
again.
But not really.
The other
not
farewell really. Tour, huh?
Yeah. So I got an interesting note the other day. Herbie Hancock is back on tour.
Oh, I'd like to see him. I'd like to see him again.
So I've seen Herbie so many times, and I love Herbie. Last time I saw Herbie was actually in a concert, touring concert with Chick Corea. So dueling pianos.
That would be an interesting
That was an amazing, amazing moment about two greats, you know. So before we leave Dylan, you got a 1, 2, 3 songs that you just never tire of listening to Dylan? Or is there not? Or is there just like
the whole
none?
Nashville Skyline album I'm sitting down and listen to?
You know, there's a couple songs on Blood on the Tracks that I really like. But most of the songs that I always, always think about are Masters of War. I can't think of Dylan without thinking of Like a Rolling Stone, and which is not the name of the song, but it's something close.
It's cool. It's Like a Rolling Stone.
Yeah, Like a Rolling Stone. Okay, and then songs names are slowly drifting from my, but I can sing them.
I'm sure you could. So there's the the album that always is my go-to is Positively 4th Street. Okay. I mean, I just, you know.
So, but album, now you asked me.
Every song on that album is just like, wow. It's like, it for me, it's just, it's not even a song, it's an experience. There's something about that album for me, sort of like listening to, you know, the album Blue by Laura Nyro? And when she's on the album with the famous bass player, whose name I'm going to forget, Charles Mingus. And that album, you know the Dylan album, I like these albums that I can't separate a song from another song because I'm so in a trance listening to the album. It's like I can't move. I can't read a book while I'm listening to this. I can't walk around when I'm listening to this. I'm stuck in my chair, and it evokes these moments in my life that I just need to just listen. I know for you, Walden, it's, you know, get the funk out of here or, you know, tear the roof off the sucker. But
I grew up playing Dylan on guitar. So this is all of his early songs I had to learn on acoustic guitar. So that's where I generally go to. His later works, electric, I never learned to play them. However, you know, there are so many great songs. And again,
over 500 songs is the reference online, and I feel that that's a misnomer. I probably think it's probably closer to well over 1,000 songs when you think of all the tracks and all the albums he's had.
I actually had occasion to look up those numbers recently, and part of the problem in how many, you know, and I was looking at him and Frank Sinatra, and because Frank Sinatra has, it's the same issue. They don't know how many songs he's recorded, but he didn't write them, of course. He only wrote one. But the problem is when they start counting songs, if you record it as an electric song and you rearrange, or you record it as an acoustic song and then you rearrange it and it sounds completely different as an electric song, and you record that. Did you record two songs, or did you record one song?
You rearranged it. You recorded it.
So the numbers get inflated rapidly when you say all the different songs you've
all
recorded,
the different versions.
All the different versions.
Yeah.
And Frank was really big on that, and so is Bob Dylan. Some of my favorite songs are some of his live, you know, electric versions of some of the old, you know, acoustic songs that he did. And they're just amazing because they're so different. And yet, you know.
It's All Right, Ma, for me. It's All Right, Baby Blue, you know. Like I said, there are some songs that I could just, Dylan's, you know, original recording of All Along the Watchtower. You know, it's like, you know, and you know, you fast forward, everybody always, you know, thinks about the Hendrix version. I always think about the Dylan version because that's where I heard it first. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's, like I said, there are some, Dylan has some touch points in my brain and in my life that I go back to mentally because as he morphed through the different images of who Dylan was, I think about all the different morphing moments of one's life and how one evolves and changes or comes back to things because that's the basis of who they are.
But that's truly a root talent to do that.
Well, so there's very few artists that are both singer-songwriters that have a 70-year career or a 60-year career.
How many? Can you name more than five?
I'm not sure I can. But the ones that seem to survive that length seem to. I'll give two examples. You know, you have Bob Dylan and you have David Bowie on a different level. And what they both did is reinvent themselves over and over again.
So I will say that Bowie is of that category, but not of that length of time because he passed.
Yeah, well, so he was...
he passed, so, yeah, you know what I mean? But, so he had a 50-year career.
60-year career, but yeah. He had
a, well, yeah, let's do a little math here, you know.
Yeah, so, so his first folk song album was in 62,
like
I think,
Bowie?
63. Yeah, when he was recording as Davy Jones, he had to change his name. So he had a, he was trying to be Bob Dylan. That was his first career before he did Space Oddity. And he had two albums, and he did some really awful, awful novelty songs that, you know, that are perfect for like 63-ish era, you know. But then he changed his name because of the Monkees to David Bowie, and his career took off. But he was performing, just like Bob Dylan's performing earlier. Now, he's older than Bob Dylan, obviously, you know, when he started. So, but he started, I'll give it 61, 62 in his performing career to what?
How's this? I did not know that.
Wow.
That he started in 61.
I'll mark that on the tape here.
I actually had a vinyl collection of his early works that
you since melted down
because they were so bad.
You turned them into little coasters.
They drifted in the various moves.
I might be off by a year. It might be 62, 63 instead of 61, 62. But it's that earlier era that he started in. And, you know, he was a monster, you know.
Paul McCartney.
Yeah, Paul McCartney had a career.
Had a career still going on.
Yep.
Started in the late 50s.
Clapton.
Clapton was early 60s, but was he a singer songwriter at that beginning part?
No, he never wrote songs much.
He was not. There was more J.J. Cale songs, other people's songs, and only recently, but that was not just written by him.
But I know, but I'm saying he wrote lyrics to songs in Cream. He wrote lyrics to songs in Delaney and Friends, and so he started writing songs in the 60s.
But wasn't singing much.
That's true.
And so it wasn't until he hit that 70s stride, right? What was it? Ocean Boulevard? 461 Ocean Boulevard. Yeah. That he found his
voice. Urban Diver.
Gosh, you know. 6 years later. Oh, my goodness.
But I'm saying, it's interesting how people morph, so to speak.
What about Eric Burdon?
So.
Wildeberry or not?
No.
Eric Burdon was not a Wildeberry.
This is going to be a recurring theme on our podcast. Wildeberry? No.
Okay.
No, not. And I love Eric Burdon. I've seen Eric Burdon easily 50 times.
So let me just say, anyone who plays the blues for a living isn't a Wildeberry.
I would have to agree with that.
That's a different route.
That's a different category, yeah.
It might be the Wilbury's cousins live out in the hills over there.
But not a Wilbury.
Not a Wilbury.
Okay. Not a Wilbury. So, you know, we're gonna have to mess with this for a while, but I've started a new thing.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm going to give credit where credit's due. The Writers of Billions, the television show on Showtime, coined the phrase, because it was a recent episode I saw, you know, and the main character says to the other guy, he's not a Wilbury, you know? Right. And he says, Wilbury or not Wilbury? He says, definitely not Wilbury.
So going back, what about Elton John?
Not a Wilbury.
No, he's not a Wilbury, but what about his career length?
Oh, Elton has an amazing career length. But, you know, thank God for Bernie Taupin.
I mean,
if there is no Elton John without Bernie.
So that's interesting because... While he's writing the songs.
And he says that out loud.
The lyrics are not his.
Right.
So it's a very... I mean, that's a...
He writes music and he sings, but he's not the songwriter.
Right. So, like Frank Sinatra.
He's the composer.
Right.
You know, but he does compose the music. Mm-hmm. So, and that's one of the great partnerships...
One of the most amazing, successful partnerships. And, by the way, have had a rock career, a movie career, you know, of soundtracks. Have had a resurgence.
They've done a little bit of everything.
Even had a couple of hits of the disco era.
Mm-hmm.
You know? You may not like that the stuff that, but they did have some of it in the disco era.
What about Jackson Browne?
Jackson Browne hasn't lasted as long. I mean, he hasn't.
Jackson Browne could have been a Wilbury. Yeah, could have been. Yeah. Could have been, but he sort of missed it.
Yeah.
He could have been a Wilbury. He could have been somebody. He could have been a contender.
He could have been a contender.
But you know, and I think it's not because Jackson Browne isn't talented.
Oh, no, he's exceedingly talented.
Jackson Browne is exceedingly talented.
He's a great songwriter.
And a great, Laura Nero is a Wilbury. Mm-hmm. Laura Nero is a Wilbury, and I'll tell you why. She could write and sing, and if she was in there, she'd rip him up.
Carole King.
Carole King is not quite a Wilbury, whereas Laura Nero would be, in my opinion.
I think James Taylor's a Wilbury.
Who?
James Taylor.
I think you're right. Because if you've seen James Taylor rock out, he rocks the house. Yep. And his band is still to the day one of the tightest backup bands. He's got Russ Kunkel on drums. He's got a bunch of guys that are still.
So I think one of the things that is a defining moment for Wilbury is you got to have a certain tweaky sense of humor.
And you got to be able to go swing in a lot of ways. Oh, you got to be able to go country. Got to be able to go rock. You got to be able to go.
Not very big of a ego.
Not so big of an ego that thinks he needs.
I know. That's
what makes him a Wilbury or not a Wilbury. So can you submerge yourself enough that you're going to trade vocals or trade licks.
That's
right.
You get to play this.
Or, you know what I mean? It's sort of back and forth.
So going back to your singer-songwriter, Simon and Garfunkel.
So Paul Simon certainly started in the 50s, early 60s, certainly has had the arc of that, you know, the arc of the diver, had the arc of that career. Stevie Winwood.
He started very young.
Who started very young and found himself in traffic, even after having a successful moment with Spencer Davis Group. I mean, really found himself and was able to sustain himself. And, you know, as you know, when I saw them together, amazing performer still to this day.
And I'm just going to throw out Stevie Wonder.
Oh,
Stevie Wonder.
That is a stratosphere in and of itself.
I know, but
to have a career that starts at 12.
We can include him just about every conversation we have.
I know. Well, that's why I was waiting until the end.
To start a career that's, what, 9 or 10 or 12?
Yep.
George Clinton is...
Not a Wilbury.
But you know who could have been a Wilbury, but he just didn't have the right ego was Zappa.
Zappa would never be a Wilbury.
Right, I'm saying.
He doesn't play well with others.
Right, that's what I'm saying. He doesn't have the wrong ego for it. Yeah. You know what I mean? But Zappa, was one of the most amazing composers.
But
and everybody, you know, if you don't think of Zappa as a composer, you start in the wrong place.
You know, one person we also overlook every once in a while is Joe Walsh.
Interesting. Not a Wilbury.
Not a Wilbury,
but quite the singer-songwriter.
He is
quite the performer.
He was actually, that was the first rock band I saw was James Gang when they first 49. Came out. When they came out in
67.
Whatever what it was. Played at the KRNT Theater, Des Moines, Iowa.
Thank you very much.
That does not exist anymore, so I can say that.
Come on down Thursday.
Tickets worth $3.50 for the night.
Maybe. Yeah,
exactly.
So I was looking at going back through old prices of concerts and concerts I saw, and concerts that, you know, the Fillmore, you could go for $3.50 and see
four bands. Yeah, I know. It's, but at the same time, you know, minimum wage, if they didn't have it, but it was like 60 cents. Right. So, you know, it was five times, you know, 5 hours worth of work. And that's, you know, you think about that, and minimum wage now is $10 to $15 depending where you're at.
Right.
Five hours worth, that's $75. It hasn't changed.
The ratio.
You know, the ratio of what you're paying for. It just, there was a sweet spot, though, in the early 70s, before arena rock really took off, where you could still see a band for $10, and it was like only three hours of work. So I mean, it was like there's a moment where the admission prices hadn't gotten huge.
Yeah, I think
so. You could put Springsteen in that category too.
Bruce is certainly a potent, powerful singer-songwriter. Career starts in the late 60s, mm-hmm. early 70s, you know, playing in bars, you know, Asbury Park, Stone Pony kind of thing. But so here, go back to where I started before.
And he was on the cover of Time and Newsweek in 1971.
John Landis. Landis as his producer, manager. You think about this. This is the guy who has perfected physical presence, workout, and body and everything to be able to still to this day. I don't know how old Bruce is right now. He's probably in his 70s. Still to this day could do a five-hour show and not even take a breath.
That's what I was most impressed with when I saw Springsteen was just they came out for 3.5 hours and didn't stop.
Three and a half hours. So you got gypped is what you're saying. Because
it was in Michigan, the typical
Springsteen show, right? You know, if he plays Giant Stadium mm-hmm. still to this day, and he'll sell out seven nights at Giant Stadium, you know, in New Jersey.
It's home turf.
Right. And he will do seven nights, 5 hours a night, mm-hmm. and everybody's on their feet the entire concert, and including the band.
So let me say, earlier, I think you asked, who's the, you know, that voice of a generation, that singer of the generation that Bob Dylan has obviously become? Mm-hmm. I don't know who asked the question, but Springsteen may indeed, you know, 30 years from now, if he continues writing and playing, attain some sort of status.
So he had his rock moment. Yeah. He had his protest moment. Right, yeah. He had his solo moment. He had his stage moment. Right, and then he came back to his rock and roll, I'm going to kick out the jams moment.
But I'll say he sort of had the reverse sort of musical arc of Bob Dylan. He started out in rock and came into folk.
Oh, my.
And his folk is great.
Mm-hmm. He didn't start out in rock. He kicked booty in rock. I mean, if you had the pleasure like I did to be at the Stone Pony in those first couple of years where they were playing, you thought, and it's like when I saw the Ramones back in that time, there were like these seminal moments where, you know, seeing the Ramones at that time, seeing Bruce at that time, and you go, how is this physically possible? You know, one Long Island band, one Jersey band, you know, 3 hours apart, but they were like cut from the same cloth in this amazing, amazing, you know, call it a rock moment that were just way over the top.
One last parting thought. Jimmy Buffett, Wilbury?
No.
No.
No, but
no.
But Bruce Springsteen, yes.
Bruce Springsteen would be an excellent Wilbury.
See?
What about Bob Seger then?
No. Sorry. Doesn't pull it off.
Almost, but not quite.
No, it doesn't pull it off. Whereas Bruce has the ability to
step back. I think he's got the genetic Wilbury in him.
Ted Nugent.
No,
certainly not. So, you know, any of these Detroit references, forget about it, buddy.
You gotta love the Detroit
Iggy Pop,
guys.
No.
Yeah. No, but Bruce could have been somebody. He could have been a Wilbury contender.
Could have been a contender.
He could actually resurrect the Wilburys.
He could. Actually, you are righteous about that comment. He has both the ego subversion and the ability to stand out. And the ability to trade licks,
yeah.
trade singing, trade lead, and pull it off very effectively. I'll give you another one from the same man who doesn't have your reputation but could pull it off. Little Stevie.
Little Stevie.
Little Stevie is a Wilbury, and I'll tell you why. He is an amazing musician, amazing, still a great singer.
Put Daryl Hall in that group.
Daryl Hall
could be a great
could
Wilbury.
Could be a great Wilbury.
He could take Jeff Lynn's
And he's got
place.
A house, too, that he can have.
You know, and he's proven it with Daryl's house, yes. that he can pick up any thread of any era. I've seen him
yep.
do it a countless number of times.
Oh, he's an amazing musician.
But Little Stevie, yep. Daryl Hall,
right,
yep.
Write in campaign, please, everyone send letters to
Springsteen. So we're going to, let's end on this. Maybe let's end on this thought. You know, we're going to start trying to do some call-in stuff just for, we want to tease that for everybody out there, that we're going to start do that. We'd like to get some email on the website, which what's you know maybe Bradley you could
so
mention
we
the website.
We actually haven't mentioned the website. It's www.musicreallymatters.com.
And if you're listening to this, you've already been to the website,
or you're one of the privileged few that have got a behind the scenes copy. Yes.
Okay, so
but, yeah, the website is growing.
And so we'd love to get.
We have sponsors on there now.
Do we have a place to have people write in? Let's post the common question is who or who not would make a wonderful Wilbury.
That we can put a blog post.
Who's a Wilbury? Who's a Wilbury? I think that's a good conversation.
We have a blog page, and Walden, I think you can run with that one.
Yeah, I'll post a question and say, Wilbury. Lenny's not a Wilbury. I'm not a Wilbury. Brad's not a Wilbury.
Who in your heart is a Wilbury? Who makes that cut?
Yep.
And it has to be, again, some of the characteristics. Yeah, they could have a strong ego, but they're willing to be able to submerge their ego.
I think everybody has to argue for their own reason why someone has to.
What about
I don't
Crosby,
think we
Stills,
to choose.
Or Nash?
Certainly not.
Any of
certainly, certainly not, Mr. Crosby.
Crosby?
Certainly not. Mr.
In a parallel
Stills,
universe.
Mr. Stills by himself could be a whole nother Wilbury.
No, he would not be a good Wilbury, though.
But he could be, I said, a whole another Wilbury.
He could be a Wilbury family by himself.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
And Neil Young couldn't be a Wilbury.
No, Neil Young could not be a Wilbury.
Now, Nash might be a Wilbury.
Nash, actually, might be, could be, it's sort of like, if you think about Graham Nash, how he's lived his career, you know, and
it's
it was
been
willing
in collaboration.
To, right? It was all about collaboration. It was all about stepping up or stepping back, being able to do it. He couldn't trade a lick worth a darn. He
Kenny
could
Loggins.
Not. No. I'm sorry, but no. I love Kenny Loggins. I mean, Loggins and Messina, Poco, all that. I love that stuff. But Wilbury-ish?
No.
Not quite.
Yeah, I know one of Walden's favorites would be,
I love Loggins and Messina.
I like Loggins and Messina, too.
You know, but,
Kenny Rogers.
No.
He just has the wrong ego for it.
You think so?
He has the... Glenn Campbell would have made a great Wilbury.
Yeah.
Glenn Campbell would have made a great Wilbury.
I think he would have been, yes. Fantastic.
Because... he understood what it was to be in the back, in the front, and could do it all. He would have made a great Wilbury.
Steven Tyler.
No, hell no.
Okay.
Hell no.
Okay.
Hell no. Ringo Starr, in his own ilk, because of what he's done with the All-Star Band, would make a great Wilbury.
So interestingly enough, the Wilburys. The Traveling Wilburys, all guitarists.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying. Ringo Starr.
So, and they had a backup band,
right?
That shall be unknown, in the background playing for them.
They're Wilburyettes.
Wilburyettes.
Wilburettes.
Wilburettes.
So
yeah. The traveling show, but if you expand it to different instruments, you're right. I was just thinking about guitarists,
yeah, I know.
Singers. But that would be, I think Ringo would be a great...
Ringo's Wilbury.
Ringo's Wilbury. So we'll put that on our website.
Yep.
And
so we're also going to try to do a couple of live shows. We're planning to do a live show at a Dave Matthews concert, actually, coming up in a couple of months.
Dave Matthews, Wilbury?
No. I don't think so. So we're also going to do a couple of live events from the two places that are sponsoring us. We'll try to post that when we're doing a live event. We'll be doing live Q&A at the events. So we'll try to do that. They're in Colorado, so if you're coming from Nepal, you'll have to call in.
Well, you'd mentioned, too, some Facebook shows.
Yes, we're going to probably do a couple of Facebook live shows as well.
So if you're in Nepal, you can get them on a time delay.
Yeah, well, you could get it. You could see us, but I don't think you could be here. So if we could hook it up where you could do a live question on Facebook, we'll have to leave that to our junior executive producer.
Mr. Junior Producer.
If we could hook that up, that would be kind of cool. Get a question from Kathmandu, because I'm going to Kathmandu. Sorry.
That's Bob Seger. That's Bob Seger.